Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 212. I'm Rob Wright, Security News Director at TechTarget, and I am here with Senior Security News Writer Alex Kalafi. Alex, welcome.
Thanks, Rob.
How are you today?
I'm okay. It kind of feels like every week or two for the past month, 2 months, 3 months, there's been something that I've never seen before on the cybersecurity beat. Whether it's a single threat actor conducting a large-scale ransomware campaign using a single vulnerability in Clop, or it's what we're talking about today, where a vendor asked its customers to wholesale replace hardware because of something a little fishy going on.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Today we are talking about Barracuda. Barracuda Networks, their email security gateway appliances, which were under attack, maybe still under attack, which were compromised. We're going to get into who did it, why, how, what happened, Barracuda's response. I assume most people at this point know about the zero day, but there's been an important development. I should note we are recording this on June 15th, Thursday morning. It's a good thing we waited to record, Alex, because you and I were about to record yesterday and technical difficulties. We couldn't make that happen. And lo and behold, Mandiant came out with a pretty lengthy, detailed technical report on the activity within these Barracuda ESG devices. And it was pretty interesting. And I don't think it answers all the questions, but it's a good look at what's been going on. So I guess it's fortuitous that we had some technical difficulties yesterday and that we postponed recording. It's a doozy. So Alex, why don't you sort of rewind the clock here and take us through the initial developments with this story? Because I believe you wrote the first one.
Sure. I can walk through everything up to the Mandiant sort of business from today as of this recording. So Barracuda Networks, big network security vendor, on May 23rd, they first disclosed a vulnerability that CVE 2023-2868 that they didn't really disclose what it exactly was at first, other than that it seemed to affect their email security gateway devices. But over the following week, days, it became clear that it was a very serious remote command injection vulnerability, that it had already been under exploitation, and that it had been exploited as far back as October 2022. Now that's all really bad in its own right. But there is an additional layer to this story that our colleague Ariel Waldman wrote about on June 8th, where Barracuda Network said that patches for the vulnerability are actually insufficient, which is something you don't necessarily typically hear vendors saying, and that the devices must be replaced entirely.
Yep.
And there's a little more to it, but I guess that's the quick hit of very serious vulnerability, you know, critical zero day, which in a certain small way, not really, but it's like, okay, whoop-de-doo, there's 10 of these a year now plus, right? Affecting big vendors. But the additional layers of one, it going back to October 2022 exploitation, which is fairly long for a zero day to be exploited, not unheard of, but fairly long, and that the patches are insufficient to the point where hardware needs to be replaced entirely.
Yeah.
And that sort of took us up to early June. Now what's happened since then?
Well, and we should know, so there was on June 6th when they announced this additional guidance, and they updated their advisory. You know, they said impacted ESG appliances, and you know, a lot of people took that to mean like compromise. Like these are the devices that were maybe attacked or hacked or whatever. But it was such a short notice that I could definitely see how there may be some confusion about what constitutes an impacted device. You know, when you say impacted ESG appliances must be immediately replaced regardless of patch version level, like you said, that's not good. And, you know, a lot of experts out there are saying, this is unusual. We have not seen something like this before.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is speculation amongst different, I guess, threat analysts and researchers and other security vendors about what this meant. And I believe Caitlin Condon, who's the vulnerability research manager at Rapid7, she sort of maybe was first to post about this. And she had put it very succinctly that basically, you know, if you have to have a total replacement of affected or compromised devices, then that means that probably means, or at least implies, that the bad guys were able to maintain persistence on a low enough like level that I think she said even wiping the device wouldn't completely eradicate their access. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, according to Mandiant's report this morning, that is kind of what happened. So the top line news from this report is basically that Mandiant is attributing these attacks to a suspected nation state group, cyber espionage group, or threat actor out of China in support of the People's Republic of China. This is not entirely surprising. In fact, a lot of people, you know, I'm sure predicted this or suspected it because, as we know, Chinese nation state, state-sponsored hacking groups have been going after network edge devices, VPNs, for some time, both with 0 days and just end days, known vulnerabilities, and exploiting them to get access, collect data, et cetera, and maintain a persistent foothold on those devices in certain organizations. And Mandiant gets into why, you know, what the crux of this campaign is, going after a lot of government entities in different countries and just sort of outlining the malicious activity. But the thing that is really interesting to me was just about how they were able to maintain the persistent access. Mm-hmm. And this post is very technical. I'm not going to claim to understand why a total firmware update or why certain patches failed. It's still not entirely clear to me why Barracuda needed to issue the full replacement guidance for compromised devices. I'm still a little in the dark about why that final step needed to be taken. But basically, the long and short of it is these guys, this group that Mandiant tracks as UNC4841, which they think may be associated with known nation state Chinese threat groups, that they were able to sort of bypass and circumvent these patches. And if I'm reading the timeline correct, it looks like Barracuda tried twice and they were able to get around them both times through different ways. And that's not good.
Mm-mm.
That is not good. I think in one part they describe, Mandiant describes how the threat group it sounds like they were inserting commands into the update from Barracuda. And I hope I have that right. That's what it sounds like from reading the text here. The first time that they maintained access after update, apparently they were issuing hourly and daily cron jobs. Cron jobs are basically like you know, it's utility program commands or tasks. And, you know, again, I can't claim to understand why an update or a firmware update or a patch like was not able to stop the threat actors from doing this stuff. But these guys knew enough that they were able to very, very, very quickly get around these patches and tinker with their malware, which includes a rootkit, and maintain access. Like basically just swat away the patching attempts, plural attempts, from Barracuda and just knock it away, to the point where, you know, Barracuda, I guess, just threw up its hands. And Mandiant agrees. They apparently issued an advisory to customers. They issued something on, it sounds like on May 31st, basically telling compromised customers, take these devices out, replace them, get rid of them now. And like I said, it sounds like Mandiant agreed with that and thought it was the best course of action. That is shocking. That is that they were able, that this group, UNC4841, was just able to on the fly tinker with its malware and its backdoors or whatever, and just shoot down those updates like they were nothing. So let's start there. Alex, you mentioned at the top that you were like, I see something new every day or every week.
That I've never seen before, like on this beat, right?
Yeah. I mean, what's your reaction to this?
I think what's so interesting about this is that there's a certain trust that exists between the customer and the organization. And I think every organization understands that there are vulnerabilities and there's always a risk of compromise. But there's also, if it's a trusted vendor you're buying from, and I think this is true in any factor of life, you sort of go like, okay, even if things go wrong, they'll fix it. And to the best of their ability, they are. But I think there's something so humanly frightening about a vulnerability being so thoroughly exploited that the vendors put on their back foot to the point where hardware has to be wholesale replaced. Yeah. So which is a long way of saying, like, it's freaking scary a little bit.
Yeah. And on that point, let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a Barracuda ESG customer and you have a device and you did not get through, you know, the product portal or whatever, you did not get an advisory and an alert saying that you were compromised. Mm-hmm. So you patch your systems, you patch your devices, but you, as best as you know, you are not compromised, and you've done a review and you've looked into it. You've checked for the IOCs, et cetera, et cetera. How confident can you really be going forward? You know what I'm saying? Like, so you have, you're not compromised.
Mm-hmm.
You were not part of these attacks, but you're running a device that now that you know, for those that were compromised, they had to replace it. Look, vulnerabilities happen. And I don't know like how obvious or not this vulnerability was. Obviously it was a 0 day. Obviously it was exploited for months. That's not good. But when you have, when something like this happens at the hands of, you know, what Mandiant calls, you know, an aggressive and extremely skilled threat group, a nation state threat group from the most skilled nation state out there in terms of their hacking capabilities. I think, you know, most folks would agree it's China. I think that sort of lessens the hit that you're taking as a vendor. And we could disagree about, you know, that, but I think you're right about, you know, when you have to basically scrap a device that's been compromised and the updates, you can't get rid of the bad guys' access. That is chilling and it's unnerving. And I wonder what this means for the Barracuda customers out there who don't have a compromised ESG device, I'm guessing you still got to feel a little nervous going forward that something could happen in the future. And you may be in a similar boat. So let's talk about Barracuda's response to this.
Okay.
So it turns out, according to the timeline that Mandiant put out today, that, like I said, they apparently alerted customers that they needed to replace on May 31st. And apparently this was known, I guess, before they had made a statement about this, but they had tried the first patch for 2023.2868 was, I think, on May 20th. And then the second attempt was May 21st, which predates the public advisory on May 23rd. So you've got silent patching, all of this going ahead of the public announcements for those respective details. So what do you think about that? Are these extenuating circumstances, you think, because of the nature of the attack and it's a nation state Chinese cyber espionage group? Or is this, I don't know, does this fall into silent patching is not good and you got to be clear with your updates and you got to be clear with your advisories and your guidance and everything should be public?
Both, right? In a sense.
Fair.
I think it's like, yeah, everything should be public all the time and everything should be transparent all the time, et cetera, et cetera. At least to the point where it's readable to the customer. But that's not going to happen.
Yeah,
and that's not an excuse for Barracuda. And in fact, I do agree with the subtle argument in there in your question that there is a little bit of a silent patchiness going on. But I also think it's kind of mildly extenuating circumstances too. I'm kind of middle of the road on this one. Where are you at?
I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think, you know, silent patching it's problematic. And researchers and InfoSec experts hate it for a reason. But, you know, just going through the timeline here. All right. You know, Barracuda identifies weird, anomalous traffic originating from, you know, some ESG appliances, and they immediately engage Mandiant. So they bring Mandiant in.
Mm-hmm.
That's on May 18th. The following day, they've already identified that, look, we've got a zero day. Like, we've got something in our ESG product that we've got to take care of. And then the day after that, they issue silently the patch, the first patch. And then May 21st, the second attempt. I think it was a remediation script. So not a full patch, but, you know, quibble on the terms there. So, this is me speculating. You know, I don't know this, but I wonder if Mandiant in the process of investigating this said, you know, maybe it's better to not tip our hands.
Oh, that's fair.
We're observing the threat activity. We don't want to let the bad guys know that we're onto them just yet. And if we push out a public advisory, they're going to know and they're going to change up. And we need this time to sort of collect as much data about their access and their persistence and what they're doing on these devices as we can before we show our cards. Now, again, that's speculation. Mandiant hasn't said anything. I don't know if they signed off on the decision to do it this way. Obviously, Barracuda is the vendor and they have the final say in these matters. So I don't even know if, you know, for all I know, Mandiant behind the scene was, you know, behind the curtain was just saying, you know, we shouldn't do it this way, blah, blah, blah. I don't know that.
That's a valid point, though. Like, yeah, transparency is great, but if a little not transparency now will serve the customer in the long term. Sure. Yeah. Hold off. Yeah.
Well, now let me hit you with this.
Okay. Sure.
So they did exactly that. They investigated. They pushed out a patch the next day.
Mm-hmm.
They pushed out another remediation script the following day. And according to this blog post, these guys, this UNC 4841 was so good that they were just like immediately were able to update their malware and their tools on the fly, like we previously discussed, and mm-hmm. just knocked those missiles out of the sky. You know, that is frightening. That I think that should be unnerving to any vendor or any customer out there that has any type of information technology system in their network. I mean, if you have a network, you've got information technology in there. You know, there's no business that doesn't have some type of information technology, but you get my point. Enterprise mm-hmm. level. That's chilling. And I kind of get now why it took so long for the details like this to come out. Cause you know, I had a problem with that. I was lamenting this in our Slack discussions. I've tweeted about it. I've said, you know, how can you just put out a 2-sentence advisory update on June 6th saying replace your compromised devices and not share any more information? And now it's a week later and they've shared more information, and it's like, I think it sort of maybe helps that case a little, even though I still have questions about why they weren't more informative with those and earlier with those public advisories. But now you look at this Mandiant report and you're just like, wow, these guys, the tools they were using, the rootkits. And as you know, we were talking about rootkits earlier this morning. They can be a real problem. In fact, you just started playing BioShock? BioShock, the good old days. Secure ROM, DRM. Not technically a rootkit, but rootkit-like behavior. Just want to say that for the record. I know it's not a rootkit. Sony got very upset with that back in the day. But, I mean, obviously you were reading up on this. You know how problematic this stuff can be and how persistent it can be and how hard it is to remove. And that's just a corporate DRM, you know, copyright tool. So, compared to a malware kit like Sandbar, I think it was Sandbar that Mandiant talked about in their report. I don't know, man. I don't know.
Is a man not entitled to complete control over the victim network?
Nice. Well played.
Is a man not entitled to the sweat of his persistent access?
Yeah.
No, I think what you're looking at is the complexity of all this, right? Where there is a bit of an argument there, and also Barracuda did what was in their own best interest first, right?
Probably. Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's like it never feels that good, but it's kind of what happens, right?
Right. Right. I mean, I hope we get more information about why Barracuda, and I guess Mandiant too, thought that the full replacement was the best option with this. Why? What was it about this malware, you know, these malware tools, whether it was, I think it was Sandbar was the one that was the rootkit. I should probably look that up. Sandbar? There's all sorts of sand stuff these days, you know? Sandbar, mm-hmm. yes, rootkit. Why they were able to just stick around even with these updates, and why a full firmware update or something, why wiping the device wasn't going to remove that access, like Caitlin Condon had mentioned in her Rapid 7 blog post. I hope we get a little bit more detail, a little bit more explanation about why that didn't work or wouldn't work. But for now, this is, I think this brings into light just what was going on here and why. And it's very useful. And I encourage everybody to check out the Mandiant post and really read through all the technical details there, because there is a lot. Multiple tools, multiple malware, just the way that they were able to abuse these devices and use them, lateral movement, using them to send emails to other victims, apparently. It's I mean, like Mannion said, aggressive and skilled. So
can I before we close, can I ask you one sort of controversial question that I think is perfect for a podcast?
Yeah.
Okay. In a world and in a year where people are discussing software liability and where the line is,
that's a great question,
before someone could and perhaps should face liability litigation consequences for a vulnerability that, even if Barracuda is brunting the cost, the brunt of the impact falls on the customer's shoulders. Does this vulnerability get over the line? Like, is this because the thing I've been thinking about for the last few weeks is, when does a vulnerability become unacceptable?
Yeah.
And is this it, Rob?
What a truly great question. Right now, as it stands right now, like, just looking at the details of this information, I would say no.
Uh-huh.
And the reason I would say no is because I think, you know, when you have a zero day and it's exploited by a skilled group, the assumption is that, you know, maybe it wasn't a super obvious vulnerability, and that only a skilled aggressive group like UNC 4148 was able to find it. So that's my hunch.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I haven't seen anything out there from any researchers or bug experts saying, like, oh, this was a, you know, this was an obvious flaw. How did they miss this? This is sitting there right out in the open. This is such poor coding, et cetera, et cetera. Now, what I will say is that I think it was, maybe it was earlier this year, but it could have been last year. Ariel wrote a story about how cyber insurance carriers are now starting to sort of take into account what types of devices and software you're deploying, like which vendors you're using. And if you're using vendors that have a lot of vulnerabilities and a lot of zero days, they're going to start to raise your costs, raise your premiums. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember which vendors were mentioned by some of the carriers. I don't know if Barracuda was one of them. It might have been. But obviously, you know, we've seen all the advisories about VPNs and network edge network security software and appliances being targeted by nation state groups and by threat actors. So, you know, I think that it's a fair question to raise about whether they should be taking heat for something like this. But again, as it stands right now, I would say probably not with the information that we have. So, but that is a great question, because this, to your point, this is only, the scrutiny on this stuff is only going to increase.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I don't think we're going back to the way it used to be. I don't know that we're going to have laws anytime soon. I don't know that we're going to have regulations that are going to be penalizing software companies or hardware companies for stuff like this. You know, that could be a long way off. It could never arrive, but the scrutiny and the pressure and the attention on this stuff and what it means to a vendor when they have a product that goes out and has a really critical vulnerability, a zero-day vulnerability that forces you to have to rip and replace compromised devices. Like, we're not going back to the old days. this is only moving forward. So I think it, like I said, truly great question, Alex. What are your thoughts? I mean, I don't know. Do you think this is like just by nature of what happened, the results of the vulnerability are enough to say, like, man, you guys got to clean up your act. I don't know.
So I agree with you. If in my interpretation of what you're saying is that, like, executives shouldn't be handcuffed against a brick wall and taken to jail. They shouldn't be.
Sure.
They shouldn't even necessarily be fined. And maybe there shouldn't be a class action lawsuit, whatever. But I think there's another definition of the way that software liability stuff can be interpreted. Mm. And it's, could a court say, we understand the way this stuff works, but you have to pay the cost of every single one of these replacements Ooh. For the next 2 years. Ooh. And I think they should absolutely be held liable to do that if they aren't already doing that.
Ooh, that's a good question. If a customer out there who got compromised lost data,
not even lost business strictly, although that'd be in the class
action,
but just like, the full cost of replacement.
Yeah.
And I think that is what should be part of the liability.
Oh man, that's a good question.
I'll even go a little more bullish and say, make a precedent. You don't have to pay like business losses as part of a ransomware attack. Maybe like that doesn't need to be a precedent. That could be case by case. But a precedent of, let's say, we mentioned BioShock, the Xbox Red Ring of Death, right? Ooh. That Microsoft since Microsoft was replacing every single Xbox, I believe, and adding a year warranty every time it was replaced, or however that worked, and it was at no cost to the customer on a small scale. I think the same thing should work in at least cases like this, where hardware has to be replaced. Mm. At least in cases like this.
Mm. I don't know. It'll be interesting. Well, great questions. Well, let's end it there because we could discuss SBOM and software liability from here and until, the new year. Sure. But we will be keeping an eye on any new updates for the Barracuda ESG attacks and what comes to light with UNC 4841 and their persistence and why the updates patches failed. But Alex, I appreciate you discussing this with me on the pod today. This was extremely helpful.
Thanks, Rob.
And thank you to the readers and listeners of Search Security and the Risk and Repeat podcast. I'm Rob Wright, and we'll see you next time.